Hey everybody, good morning and happy Wednesday. It's hump day, halfway through the week, both our long normal week and the short plant-based morning show, three-day week. It's halfway done today. That's good thing for everybody. Big soccer day in my house, some stuff to watch later, and my son has a game. So that's kind of my plan for the day. I got a good sleep last night. I'm going to ask Doug about that in just a second, his opinion on something, and then we'll just go from there. It's only going to get better. We'll get some good stuff today. Yeah, it's going to be a good show.
Good All morning, right. Matt. How's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty well. I got a good sleep, like I said, and got up, did the bus duty, made some coffee, played some piano, did some morning pages. As you know, and anyone who's listened to Know Me Athlete Radio, they know that's my routine recently, this year. So, yeah. Hey, there's a ton of people on Instagram right now. I don't know why. So, if you are, the real show is at youtube.com/KnowMeAthlete. You want to go to that. That's where the action is with the chat, and it just sounds and looks way, way better. So, please hop over there. But if you want, keep on watching on Instagram. That's fine, too. You'll suffer through terrible audio. Doug, here's my question with sleep.
Yes.
When I actually do sleep through the night, so if I like have the big 2-hour wake up and then go back to sleep, I can actually sleep more than 8 hours and wake up feeling terrible and groggy and just awful for the whole morning. Or when I sleep well, I can make it about six and a half hours. And then I'm just going to be up because it's, you know, if I go to bed at, I don't know, 10, I'm going to toss and turn a little bit. When it's 6 o'clock or so, I've been 6.5 hours sleeping and I'm up. You think that's healthier than being 8 hours and feeling bad? Like, is 6.5 enough for somebody if you feel good?
I think so. I don't know. But I think I would rather have 6.5 hours of good, solid straight sleep than eight hours of interrupted sleep.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm guessing that your body is doing more during that 6 hours of deeper, good sleep. Than it is able to do when you're kind of in and out of sleep.
What if it's 2 4-hour blocks though? You think 1 6-hour block better than 2 4-hour blocks?
Wasn't there like a time in your life when you tried to do like this sleep thing where you would sleep for an hour every like 6 hours or something?
Yeah, and that's a terrible thing. I mean, that was a dumb idea to even try. It was in Tim Ferriss books. One of many dumb ideas in Tim Ferriss books, especially that 4-hour body book. There's some interesting stuff in it, and that whole topic is interesting. But it's just dumb. Like now, knowing how important sleep is now, and this is only 13 years later, maybe after that book came out.
Yeah.
Like sleep has gotten so much attention recently with experts and podcast interviews and things of how important it is, all the parts of sleep, not just the deep sleep or whatever. And those people were doing 40 minutes a night somehow. They were getting, I mean, that was crazy. It was like,
how are they resting outside of that?
Somehow you train yourself so that you take these little naps and your body is so sleep deprived that it goes instantly into deep sleep instead of like the hour of like warm up to that. They do whatever, three of these, four of these a day. I don't know if it was 40 minutes. I think it was more like 2 hours a night. And it was several 40 minute naps maybe. I mean, how bad could that be for you in like 20 years time? I mean, you would surely get every disease you can get if you did that for a long time.
I think that's probably, you know, obviously 2 4-hour blocks is a little bit different, but than 40 minutes and then a bunch of naps. But I think it's probably the same thing. Like, I bet your body is happier getting 6.5 hours of solid sleep than 2 4-hour blocks that are less.
It definitely feels better. So I think you're right. But like the 40 minute thing, I mean, that's crazy because you don't even get to do a whole sleep cycle in that time. In four hours, you do get a few of them, and that's then another 4 hours. So I don't really know if your body knows the difference, but it feels like it does to me. But I know people used to do this. Like, there was some second sleep thing in the medieval times when people would go to bed at dark because there wasn't a lot of artificial light. There wasn't any artificial light. And then they'd wake up at 3 or whatever, do some stuff for 2 hours, and then get the second sleep. But, I mean, they must have gone around feeling terrible the next day all the time because it just doesn't feel good.
But 6.5 hours isn't that much either, honestly. I mean, so what time did you go to bed last night?
10:30, by the time I was actually asleep. And then up
and
at
what
6.
What time did you wake up?
But more like up at 5:30, because I'll wake up too early.
5:30.
And then it'll put some tossing, turning in there, and you get 6.5 hours.
Tossing, turning in the middle of the night? So you did wake
up. Yeah, and so that's the thing. I'm calling it 6.5 hours because the Oura Ring isn't tracked. It's saying I was awake for, whatever, 30 minutes that I was sleeping. A normal person, if they were filling out a sleep survey, would say they were asleep for 7 hours. They would subtract and they would,
yeah,
they wouldn't count all this. So I think when I say 6.5, maybe that's more like 7 to normal people. And that's starting to sound like a normal range of sleep.
Yep. Yep. I agree with that. I mean, cause so I would say that I had a pretty good night's sleep last night. I went to bed at like 10:15 probably was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Woke up at 5:15 to run. And felt like I had a really solid night's sleep, but I also woke up at midnight, 12:30 or something like that, when my 3-year-old called out and had to pee and had to accompany her to the bathroom, you know, and so that was like definitely disrupted and, you know, took a minute to get back to sleep. But I still feel like I had a really solid night of sleep.
Yeah.
Even though definitely. Like the Oura Ring would have said I didn't sleep as long as I did.
Right.
Or I would say I did. But then I got up, went for my run, and then I had my coffee nap after school drop off.
That's funny that you do that you make it work. I don't really know anyone who actually does it. I always hear people recommend it as a sleep hack, mm-hmm. but you actually do.
I do multiple times a week. Not every single day, but I mean it's frequent.
Good. Oh, I didn't mention my bath. That's the other part of my morning routine. Bath is when those other things are done.
Bath.
And that's when I usually plan the morning show. Bath. The bath. Tubbing. Bath. As they call it now. Yeah.
Oh, you plan the morning show in the bath?
A lot of times. If I haven't got it done.
Do you have like
a today we had internet issues? So
what do you do?
Yeah, I just put it on the side of the tub and just do it. It's bad for my shoulder, I think, to do that, but it's okay.
How long are you in the bath for?
Probably 30, 40 minutes. Depends on
way. Really?
Yeah. Most days a week too. Not every day, but most days. Sometimes it's after the morning show. But
do you have to like warm up the water every 10 minutes or something?
No, just make it pretty hot from the beginning. It actually never gets cool. I don't know. That's not why I get out, because the water's too cold.
Wow.
Just get out. People have odd routines, I guess, right? You do coffee naps. I do baths.
Yeah. No, I mean, I like it. I think it's a great routine. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
it's not something that I do. No. I got something, which is it's like always, this always cracks me up. Every like month or something this happens, maybe every other month or something. But so, you know, yesterday I was complaining because I had a terrible night's sleep and I didn't go for my run and I was grumpy about it all morning. In the afternoon, I didn't really have a time to run because Katie was going out last night. So I did like a, you know, 20 minute HIIT workout and kettlebell workout. And then I woke up this morning to go run and my legs are just trashed. Like, it's crazy what 15 minutes of doing something that my legs aren't used to doing can do. I mean, I'm like sore and I was like running this morning, just really struggling. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know. I think of my legs as being very strong. They can carry me a really long way and up a bunch of mountains, but you know, 15 minutes with a, you know, 40 pound kettlebell and I'm toast.
Definitely. I don't know if that's an old age thing. I mean, getting older thing, but I feel like leg workouts, if you do a squat for the first time in months or something, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't walk 2 days later or deadlifts, any of that. And like, I mean, it sometimes will last for 3 days after the soreness begins that you're still limping around. Like legs are just, I mean, I guess it's a complicated muscle and you do something new and they will feel it for sure. I'm sore today too. I started some workouts yesterday or got back to a beginning of a workout, did a little bit of one. Nice. So that was a good thing.
Are you going through another training plan or are you?
I've been 2 weeks off since I did that Mass Made Simple thing, which it was really good. I loved it. And mm-hmm. then I got back to my normal thing in the new year and I just never really felt all that energized about it. So I stopped it after 5 weeks and then I just went through this 2 weeks off when I kept saying, I got to get back to it. So I've started doing the Mass Made Simple again, but I'm just going to break up the workouts. It was too much. It was too intense of a thing. To do that because it would take me like 90 minutes to get one done. So I'm just going to do, you know, half workout 3-4 times a week of that so that I'll still get it all done. It'll just be over a longer period. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to eat like I was. I'm not trying to put on a ton of muscle. I just want to be strong again.
Yeah.
So there you go. Enough about us, I guess. Good morning to people who are here, which is a bunch. Britters, Big Meaty, X Claws, Allie, Emery Dupe, Scott Mulholland, Stephen Dunn, Phyllis Hauser. Britters points out 9 hours of solid sleep last night. That's amazing. I mean, that will make you feel better than almost anything. D1 to know adventure coach, Anne Marie, I think I said already. Yep. Carmen is just here for a few minutes. Mr. Jeffrey, I'm probably repeating names. I don't know. Stephen Dunn. Anyway, good morning, everybody. I don't see our two prize fighters, Garuda Legends or what was the other guy? Richard Gaines. who was, you know, the vegan versus the omnivore. Don't see them today, but maybe they'll show up. And Vegan Stallion, another one who likes to argue, not here. So
Carmen points out that male or female, I'm not sure, that they are they're on call and getting off a 48-hour shift as a doctor. So Jeez. We have nothing to complain about. 48-hour shift.
No.
What kind of sleep are you getting in 48 hours? Because surely you have like little breaks and stuff. Nap breaks, maybe not.
I would not want to be operated on by a doctor on a 48-hour shift. I'll tell you that much. Because if I am awake for 20 hours, I start to just lose all capacity to think. So I don't know about that. But that's crazy. I didn't know they would have doctors work that long. I thought they would give you some time off or something in between. Anyway, there you go. Jeff Hudnall has shown up as well. Local Charlotte man, friend of mine, guy I met in person once. Would like to meet again, Jeff Hudnall. We should do that. All right. So we got some fun stuff today, Doug. As I promised, I do not have my my sound making computer because we had internet problems today. So Holden was having to use it with school. We were trying everything we could, and I forgot to bring it back up here. So no sound today for the weather report. But are we ready to jump into it, Doug?
The weather report. Let's do it.
Okay, starting off with a banger, the one that is the title of the show, the headlining story. The Kraft Heinz Knot Company has announced the launch of Knot Hot Dogs and Knot Sausages. Why didn't they just call it Knot Dogs?
I mean, Knot Dogs. Oh man, why did they not? Why? That's so obvious.
Maybe it's already been done. I mean, it's a very, very obvious trademark to do if you're making that kind of stuff. So probably didn't have the option. They put these things as one word. Knot Hot Dogs is all one word, and Knot Sausages is all one word, just with some capital letters in there to clarify what the different words are. You got to wonder if that's intentional now somehow. If you make up one new word, is that better? Oh. Like, can you now put meaty labels? I mean, there's no laws in the U.S. prohibiting this anyway, but just imagining what's to come. Right. I don't know. I wonder if you kind of make a new word, if that somehow gets you free, rather than saying this isn't whatever this word is.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's coming. I think we kind of knew this was coming. We knew that Kraft Heinz and Knot had partnered up. I just remember us talking recently. I hear, because we put this show on for the dog. When we leave the dogs alone, we put this show on Alexa so that they hear my voice a lot. And so I heard
stats up. I like it. It's smart.
Yeah, a lot of our listens come from dogs, which is
it turns out we only have 12 listeners and thousands of plays from
anyway,
from that song. Okay, keep going.
I heard us talking about Knotco and how big a deal it was, and something with Wrigley or something. They keep getting all these big partnerships, so I think we knew big stuff was coming from them. What was surprising, though, what was not known, was that this would be with Oscar Mayer, of course, world famous hot dog / meat company. They make hot dogs, bologna, bacon, and cold cuts, as well as Lunchables, good old Lunchables. I think they debuted this at Expo West, so it's not out yet. They're saying it's coming, but very soon. I think it's maybe even this spring, definitely this year. And apparently they said, the Veg Economist said, some eyebrows might be raised because just 2 years ago, they pulled a bizarre marketing stunt on World Vegan Day where they invited Americans to abstain from consuming the highly processed class of the bacon. Okay. No, it doesn't. Oh. It doesn't say it. Yeah, animal-free bacon. So they told people to abstain from that for a day, and if you could, you'd win a lifetime of free animal bacon.
I remember this. Do you remember that?
I kind of do too. Yeah, it almost seems like we talked about it on the show, but it says 2 years ago, so we probably didn't. So anyway, it was a weird thing, but now they're on board with the plant-based thing, and this new product incorporates bamboo fiber, mushroom, pea protein, and acerola cherry. I don't have more info about what's in it, so I don't know, like, you know, how they did it, but I know it's AI is involved with Knotco stuff, and they mimic the texture, smell, color, flavor. One of the people, Lopez May, I don't know who that is, but he says, we set ourselves a really, really high bar in terms of this, the product we need to develop. And he said, I mean, because they've looked at this market, they see the plant-based meats kind of crashing down in many ways, but they've said, this is an opportunity, this is temporary, taste is a problem, and we're going to make sure this tastes really good. So he said, they did like all this testing and things, and they said purchase intent increased from the customers that they surveyed after they tasted it, after they tasted it to an extremely high level. So they're very confident and they think this is going to be big. So I don't know. This could be somehow, I mean, just iconic meat brand.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. This seems like this could be a big deal.
Just, I mean, just like, what is it? Hillman, mayo.
Hellman's
vegan mayo for some reason, is more attractive to me. I don't know why than, you know, other vegan mayo. And also, the cream cheese.
Philadelphia cream cheese.
Philadelphia cream cheese, the vegan version of that, for some reason is more attractive to me. And there's no like, it's all just in my mind. I'm like, Philadelphia cream cheese, like that's just, that goes together, right? So of course, a vegan version of that is going to taste better. So, you know, if Oscar Mayer puts out a hot dog, I love hot dogs. I mean, I love vegan hot dogs. I'll eat a vegan hot dog any day. And so I'm excited about this. I'm looking forward to trying.
Yeah, I think that stamp of legitimacy, it definitely, even for vegans, it makes the stuff seem like it's going to be a really good version of it, even if we know what we know about big companies and generally it's not that good. So yeah, you have to think this must be a trust signal for people who are really into these brands or just used to eating these brands. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. Interesting time for, we hear all the time about these plant-based meat closings and things. So interesting to see one come along, but I don't think they're like tone deaf here. I mean, I think they obviously know what's going on and I think they think this is going to be good enough to make it. All right. Speaking of plant-based meats, new study shows that opting for corn, that's Q-U-O-R-N instead of meat, could be comparable to consuming the Mediterranean diet when it comes to lowering bad cholesterol. A study published in Clinical Nutrition involved 72 overweight adults with high cholesterol numbers. And those who ate 180 grams of corn products daily, which is two servings, got a 10% reduction in bad cholesterol in 4 weeks' time. And they're saying that is roughly what the Mediterranean diet would do. And if you extrapolate that out to a lifetime, it's a 25% lower lifetime risk with that kind of cholesterol level compared to the other one of heart and circulatory disease. So kind of cool. Corn, don't forget, is not one of the, I mean, it's probably still considered ultra processed, but it is not made of, you know, protein isolates or wheat gluten. It's the mycoprotein, the same stuff that's in these meaty foods, mushroom things, whatever it is, mushroom root. I bought some meaty foods, by the way, yesterday at Whole Foods and looking forward to trying that again, the carne asada thing. So anyway, there's corn. I can't get into corn because it just sounds too gross. The name of the product just is terrible. You get that, Doug?
No, I mean, it just makes me want to rock and roll, you know?
Yeah, I know. Sure. Good old Jonathan Davis. Yeah. I haven't heard corn in quite a while. I haven't heard heard Limp Bizkit in a while either. I have heard the Corn Kid song. We've kind of been we brought that back in my house. It's a couple years old now, but we've been playing it a little bit. It's just a good song. I don't know. Something about corn being, the word corn being spelled with a Q-U, it just sounds like a disgusting vegan product. I don't know.
But yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, so I wish they would rebrand, but it's been around for a long time, and I think it's a healthy product compared to a lot of these other fake meats.
Yeah, I mean, I like these studies that, I mean, obviously they're probably paid for by corn, right? But I like the idea of these studies that, you know, they really see how, because everybody can make claims about, you know, lower cholesterol or better for the environment or whatever, but, you know, I appreciate that they actually dig in a little bit and see what's actually happening if you eat these products.
Yeah. And another benefit, I mean, like you said, this probably was funded by corn. I didn't look at that. But one of the nice things about doing something that is based on only a single product like this is, like, the researchers pointed out that, like, it's hard to make a whole dietary shift to, like, go plant-based or go Mediterranean. But they said if all you have to do is make one swap out meat, two servings a day, which maybe is that's all the meat somebody's eating, but maybe people eat way more than that per day. But they're saying there's a simple swap you could do and you get this benefit of basically being on the Mediterranean diet as far as heart health goes. And that's certainly an oversimplification. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a good thing. Small steps, I think, what people, a lot of people need. That corn?
Yeah. I don't know. It's the most popular song on YouTube, but I don't know that one.
You can get our Instagram shut down again. Remember that happened?
Oh, that's right. We might get cut down.
Who knows why that happened? All right, this isn't that big, but I saw it, then Aaron saw it, so I figured maybe it's showing up on people's radars. Vegan Chef won on Great British Menu. Anyone heard of Great British Menu? Maybe Steven can tell us if that's any kind of a good show or if that's just some terrible show. But anyway, his name's Kirk Hayworth. He got a 38 out of 40 by winning. He won the round featuring fish. Fish was the thing. Plant-based fish seems to be one of the trends this year. And what he did was made a mushroom dish that had some kind of, you know, fishy flavor to it, and then something else that involved seaweed, caviar, and crackers. Got an 8 out of 10 for his mushroom fish dish. That wouldn't have been enough to win, but he got some 10s on some other things. So one is a vegan, and they're saying this is a big deal because vegans haven't won this thing before.
So he didn't actually cook fish. He made a vegan dish. Right.
Didn't make fish, didn't even make a vegan fish. He made a fishy tasting thing out of, it sounds like normal, you know, whole foods and things.
That's
parsley
cool.
Porridge, mashed potato, and then some kind of seaweed salad. So anyway, they liked it. Good enough to win. I cannot imagine that stuff winning a baking show, or not a baking show, a food show. Like the food shows in the U.S. require you to go above and beyond with the stuff you make. And this just seems like such, I mean, it just seems so simple.
Man, you're hating on a show. You haven't even seen it.
I mean, parsley porridge and mashed potato was in the final plate. That's terrible. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I can't think of good ideas, but they just do all kinds of over the top stuff.
Maybe it's different. Really, fish tacos, vegan fish tacos would have been on point.
Yeah. I think British culinary world is not very developed. That's what I think.
Oh, that's some shade right there. Wow.
I mean, I'm not the first person to say British food is bad, and I've never had it.
No, I know.
I don't eat, never been there. They just eat Indian food, right? That's why there's so much Indian food in there, because they don't have their own good food.
That's why there's so much Indian food?
I think.
not because they colonized India.
Well, I know they colonized India and they brought it back, all the spices. I don't know. Are there a lot of Indians living there that would have brought their culinary traditions?
I don't know. Can't speak to it. But I don't know that it has to do with the bad food.
Steven's unaware of the show. He says, Steven, tell us how the food is in general in Britain, UK in general, and if I'm being unfair. I'm not saying it's bad because I've never had it. I just hear it's bad. All right. Speaking of Europe, we got two stats. The German Nutrition Society has updated its dietary guidelines. They're suggesting 75% plant-based foods. Legumes now have their own separate recommendation, whereas I guess they used to be part of a larger category. And fruits, vegetables, whole grains are all emphasized more than previously. So that's good. And over in the Netherlands, where Steven now lives, they are eating, a new survey has found they are eating, or 69.2% of people eat at least one meatless dinner per week. That's 42% from vegetarian things, 21%. Sorry, no, that's wrong. The last part I said, ignore that. It has about frequency. But the point is 69.2% eat one meatless dinner per week. How many think in the U.S. eat one meatless dinner per week?
12%.
Really? Even across all classes and I mean, you got to figure there's a lot of people who can't afford to eat, who like to take the cereal for dinner move once a week or something like that.
Good point.
So this doesn't seem all that high, really, if you think about.
Okay.
I mean, I don't really know.
Fair enough.
Yeah. No idea.
I don't know. But I would love to know that stat. Because seems high to me. Like, or when I first.
Right. It does seem high.
Well, I guess maybe when you dig in a little bit better. Dig in a little bit more. Not so much. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, because Meatless Mondays or whatever, just people seem really turned off by that. But if you're eating one dinner a week then already that's meatless, then that's, that's most of the work is the dinner part, right? I mean, meatless breakfast is easy. Meatless lunch is pretty easy.
Yeah. And then you're also over the mental hurdle. Like it's okay to have a meatless meal and it can actually still be a meal. It can still fill you up, which to me, that was a big hurdle. Cause I had 0% meatless dinners as a kid. We never would have a meatless dinner, I don't think. So, I think a lot of people, that's the case. Steven says, you got to visit the UK for the vegan scene at least. Yeah, I have heard London, right? Great vegan city. Some British food like fish and chips or savory pies are great, but yes, the best food there is from the colonies. And he points out he is not British, by the way. What do you think, Doug? Anything to say about that?
No, nothing to say about it.
Nothing to sort of calm anyone who might be offended or anything?
about the British food? No.
Yeah.
No. I don't know. An Irish guy can speak to British food a little bit better than we can.
All right, good. All right. This I probably should have made this the main story. I don't know. Oscar Mayer is exciting. This one will be exciting as it develops. Right now, though, we just know a little bit. And the headline is Bakery allegedly tries to pass Dunkin' Donut off as vegan. And this was in a smaller site. Well, the Philadelphia Inquirer is where I first saw it. And then it's also on Yahoo. It apparently was a social media frenzy that got ignited when the owners of a bakery kind of place called Cindy Snacks. I don't know. I don't know where it is. It must be in Philadelphia or New York or something. Anyway, he criticized their supplier, their longtime supplier, which is called, can't find it. I'll find it in a second. Anyway, criticized the supplier of sending them a Dunkin' Donut, literally a Dunkin' Donuts product, that was supposed to be supposedly a vegan gluten-free donut. And Dunkin' Donuts doesn't make vegan gluten-free donuts. They also left the sprinkles have the letter D, their D-shaped sprinkles. They left that on the donut that they sent. And that made this guy, Stengel, think something might be up. So he reached out to the people. Oh, Savory Fig is the name of the vegan and gluten-free bakery founded by Michelle Siriani in 2020. That was their supplier. Reached out. They said, no, this is legit. She later sent him a screenshot or something, or maybe an Amazon listing of Alphabet sprinkles saying, look, you can get all these. This is what I got. And that's where the D's came from. But he actually went and ordered them and found that the D's did not match at all. And also just seemed like an odd coincidence to have D's on this donut that also has the same colors and, you know, toppings or whatever it is that the Dunkin' Donut thing does. And that kind of set it off. And then the social media storm began. He posted a big post about it. Because they had to alert their customers.
They bought a test to see if it was in fact gluten free.
That's right. They did a gluten free test
and it failed.
Yep.
And this is kind of a wild story, and it makes me have a bunch of feelings. Honestly,
well, first of all, extremely dangerous, right? I mean, so they had to put this out on Instagram and basically said the people might die from this. Like, and they had to tell the supplier this. Look, you have to be honest. Someone could actually die from this. But I think they've continued to deny it. So they've alerted everyone, I guess, who bought this. But I don't know. What do you think, Doug? What are the feelings do you have?
I mean, it's wild. It's wild to think that a vegan baker. So a little more context. It's a grocer. It's like a vegan grocery store, like a store that sells a bunch of different things.
Cindy Snacks.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they source from a bunch of different suppliers, a bunch of local vegan bakeries or you know, candy makers or whatever. Bring them in. And then you like have it all in one place. They've been sourcing from this vegan baker for a number of years. And I mean, it's wild to think that like this person thought that she could get away with selling Dunkin' Donuts as Kraft vegan donuts. Like, I just can't, like, what are you thinking? Right. I mean, but also how tempting is it to think that you could just go to Dunkin' Donuts for how many years? I wonder, was she doing this? Buy donuts for a dozen for $12 and then sell them for a premium of like $4 or $5.
Market about it. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. But it also kind of just makes me it gives me a little like some unease to think about how often this might actually be happening. Not the like vegan donuts, you know, marked or like Dunkin' Donuts marked as vegan donuts, but where people just really aren't paying attention or aren't totally honest in the way they're cooking and you're actually eating something that's not vegan that, you know, is maybe labeled vegan.
Yeah. I would love to know how many of these actually sold to people because you just would think there would be some reports of people getting sick and all that.
Sorry.
But who knows? Who knows how many went? Who knows how many people just buy them for a preference rather than a real purpose or not, but a, you know, a health thing that they literally can't eat the other stuff. So who knows? Apparently Bacon Destroy, who I follow on Instagram, Natalie Slater, has a video about the thing that's been viewed 650,000 times. So I will go watch that. You should too. Bake and Destroy is her Instagram. She's a punk rocker and I like that. Anyway, it is Long Island based. By the way, the Philadelphia Inquirer's opening line, I love. Maybe America runs on Dunkin', but vegans usually don't. I mean, it's great. Fantastic opening line to an article. Anyway, so the pictures are all over the Instagram. If you look it up, you can find the stuff. Who knows how long they've been doing it? I don't know if it was just that the D sprinkles got them in trouble and they've been doing it for a long time or what, but
yeah,
we'll see. We'll see what happens. A bunch of stuff is going on now though. Everyone knows about it. The Instagram account, first of all, the donut photos were taken down from this place that's in trouble. They took down whatever donut photos they had up. And then a couple days later, the whole account was gone. So they're kind of in hiding right now. So who knows what's going on.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Like, man, what a... you have to wonder, like, if she started out with good intentions, or this bakery started out with good intentions and, you know, was actually doing it right and then just couldn't keep up with the orders or something and started buying from Dunkin', or if it was a scam all along and they were like, you know, this is a perfect way to make money. These vegans will pay a lot for a vegan donut.
Right. Yeah. So Mr. Jeffrey Thirst first thought this was a shipping error, and that, you know, certainly seems like it could have been, cause that kind of stuff has happened. We've talked about that happening before. But then he says, you know, once the supplier doubled down on it and defended it and didn't just say, well, I don't know what would happen, but anyway, it sure seems like something's up here. So we will see. We will stay tuned. All right. Anything else there to say about Donut Gate, as they are calling it?
Do you like donuts? You a donut guy?
I'm okay with donuts. Like, it's not something I ever really seek out. But I actually had a donut on Sunday because someone on this show, I forget who it was, said, you know, Charlotte has a donut place. It's like, it's all vegan. They don't put vegan in the name. It was about a discussion about vegan restaurants not saying vegan in the name for some reason, to try to appeal, I guess, to a broader audience. And they said at the end, there's this place called, I think it was Pepperbox Donuts in Charlotte. And sure enough, Aaron went there on the way to Ellery's soccer game this weekend and picked some up. And it was really good. It was not as good as the one in Asheville. What's that one?
Vortex?
Yeah, not as good as Vortex, but very good. 90% as good as Vortex. So yeah, I like that kind of donut, you know, but no topping or anything, just plain old yeast, simple donut, glazed donut. What about you? You probably like donuts, right? But not that much.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like you. If I am presented with a vegan donut, I will definitely eat it. I wouldn't even say definitely, but you know, it's a nice treat, but I never seek them out. You know, we have Dough House. We have a vegan donut shop here in Black Mountain, which just blows my mind. I love it. And, you know, and we go by there, like if we're doing a treat for the girls or just doing something special, but, it's not a regular stop for us in part because I like the plain old glazed yeast donuts the best.
Right.
And they may have just plain old glazed. I'm sure they do, but a lot of these artisan donut shops like are just covered in all this stuff. And sometimes it's too rich for me.
Right. Yeah, I don't like all that stuff. And I'm certainly not going to eat a cake donut, like a regular crumbly donut that's a piece of cake in a ring. Not interested a bit in that. But a yeast risen, you know, chewy donut with yeasty, bready flavors? Definitely I would eat that. As I did on Sunday. Okay, let's move on. One more thing. Garuda has showed up. Welcome, Garuda. Loves a coffee glazed donut. Best ever. I've never had a coffee donut, I don't think. But... kind of sounds good. Usually I would just have the coffee with the donut rather than putting them together. That's kind of a Doug move, combine multiple
you dunk, dishes you dunk and the donut in the coffee.
Of course you do that. Do you do that? You dunk here? Then you have the coffee and the coffee has like glaze bits floating around in it.
Yeah, but it's just like adding sugar. It's like making, you know, it's like a little sweet coffee drink.
Yeah, except it's your crumbs from your food and that's disgusting.
No, not disgusting. Absolutely delicious.
Okay. All right.
A real treat.
All right. Last thing we got today is one that is a little bit related to the Oscar Mayer thing. It was just a kind of an opinion piece, I guess, on it is an opinion piece on fooddive.com. The headline is Fact, Fad, and Hyperbole. What's the deal with ultra processed food? This guy, Sean McBride, is the author, founder of communication membership at grocery manufacturers, you know, big time food guy. He says, first of all, this UPF thing, all it is a new label for something that's been going on for decades and people just haven't paid that much attention to. And that's the whole idea that packaged foods aren't good, but whole unpackaged foods are good. So first thing to point out or ask about, Doug, is that something that has not really ever gathered steam? Or is that like the single biggest, you know, overarching trend of the past 40 years people have cared about with food?
I wouldn't say, I don't think I would agree that it hasn't caught steam.
That it hasn't. Yeah. Right. People know that. Yeah. People know, and anyone who's into health food knows that unpackaged stuff is generally going to be way better than stuff that comes in a
food or light. What's the expression?
Sid's meal, Sid's thing. I mean,
yeah.
Heavy box, light box.
You know, you walk the perimeter of the grocery store, mm-hmm. all that stuff. No,
but I the mean, heavy box, light box thing is just, that's just a metaphor, right? You know that, Doug, there's no box involved. It just, yeah. it's like, if you were getting a Christmas gift, you want a nice heavy box because it's loaded with nutrition in food sense.
Yeah. I, as soon as I said it, I was mixing up my metaphors here. My things. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, but I mean, it is right. The packaged foods would generally be light box in Sid's nomenclature. Anyway, so that's what he says first. He says this UPF thing has you know, been the right label at the right time for this because it has absolutely exploded. He says, like, you know, these things are sort of media monitoring on the subject captures hundreds, sometimes thousands of news stories, blog posts, and journal articles daily on the subject. So, I mean, that's true. The term just came out of nowhere, it seemed, last year, maybe a year and a half ago. And it was just everywhere, and it still is just everywhere. And everyone's talking about ultra-processed food. It basically just means what processed food used to mean. Now processed food, in this new way of talking, means like anything that's kind of made at all, but it doesn't have to be a bad thing. But ultra processed is like the made for profit with ingredients you don't know. It's what we used to call processed food. So he's right about that. It is just a new label for really the same idea. And he says, he sort of defends the manufacturers. And he says that, you know, everyone has their own way of eating now. Everyone's got their own diet that needs to be customized to them. Some with, you know, some want gluten-free, some want organic, some want low sodium, limits on sugar or saturated fat intake. And these are all based on different values, lifestyle, and health status. And he says, now that's the landscape. Now these brands have fit all these different needs. So I guess incredible accomplishment. There have been 30,000 healthier products in recent years, introduced more than 30,000 healthier products. I don't know what that means. Healthier, I guess it just what? Means, I think it means healthier than the other stuff that they've made. The brands have said, we're going to make healthier things. So we now have this light version or this thing. But like, yeah, that's the huge assumption, is that the stuff actually is healthier. And I don't know if it is. He gives examples. Products with reduced sodium, saturated fat, or sugar are popular. They're here to stay. There's even an entirely new clean label food category, which doesn't have an official definition, but it generally refers to food and beverage products with a short ingredients list, familiar, natural sounding ingredients, and no artificial ingredients. So here's where his argument goes a little astray for me, because like this clean label, this doesn't fit the definition of ultra process. If it's really clean label and it is 100% familiar, natural sounding ingredients, it's maybe not considered ultra processed food. If it's made with a profit motive, you know, it might be. But part of the definition is like, if you don't find the ingredient in a normal kitchen, a house, home kitchen, that's part of the UPF definition. So mm-hmm. I guess the only reason I have this one, there's not much more to the argument. It's kind of, he's saying, look, people, they're doing this miraculous stuff with making health foods. We're just now lumping it all into UPF, even the healthy stuff. And it's wrong. But I guess what I'm wondering, Doug, and we've talked about this before, but do you think, is there anything right about this, that like the food really is getting healthier and healthier than, say, it was 30 years ago when it was just packaged food? And now yes, it's ultra processed because it requires all this new technology to make it this way, but it is lower in sodium, lower in sugar, lower in fats, you know, all the different things that people might need. They can find a food that is that. So are the brands off the hook here? Because, you know,
I don't like the idea of comparing it to like, is it healthier than it used to be? Because I don't, I mean, what are we comparing? You know, are we comparing like the same cereal to what it used to be? Now there's like, or the same, I don't know, processed meat or something like what are we even comparing? I mean, it's hard to argue that, I don't know that anyone really can effectively argue that eating beans or lentils in their whole food form is not healthier than eating some sort of processed veggie burger or something like that, ultra processed veggie burger. Right. I mean, the whole foods are definitely going to be healthier, in my opinion. But I also think that we're probably over hyping up the dangers of ultra processed foods that, that for a lot of people and in a lot of ultra processed foods probably aren't that bad for you. And you can eat a healthy diet and include, you know, plenty of that in your diet. I would argue that. You know, obviously some are better for you than others. And, there are some that are going to have way too much sodium, way too much fat, way too much whatever than is natural. And, you know, you should avoid those and limit those. But ultra processed to me doesn't automatically mean unhealthy or bad. Of course, a whole food is going to be healthier.
Yeah. I mean, there's one possible exception, and Garuda Legends is not going to agree with this one for sure. But the plant meats versus regular meat. We just saw this thing about corn, swapping that in for regular meat, lowers cholesterol. Yep. We saw the swap meat study that, of course, Beyond Meat funded. So we got to take it with a grain of salt. That showed positive heart health outcomes. And I think diabetes maybe outcomes to choosing that instead of the other one. So, and then these plant-based meats, when they've done large kind of testing all kinds of UPF foods, they've found that the plant-based meats are the ones that are not associated with these increased cardiovascular disease or cancer risks. That was one study. I think it wasn't a large thing. So I'm not yet convinced that that's true, that these things are totally off the hook. But the point I think is that like, it's very possible that, you know, just because a food is meets the definition of ultra processed, that maybe we don't need to completely throw it out and say, this cannot be a healthy food or cannot be part of a healthy diet when it's replacing something that was less healthy than that. So I don't want to make this about the meat versus the fake meats, cause that's not really the point. The point I think is like, can these grocery store foods like that, can that, I don't know, are these things really getting any healthier? And I don't know. I think the only way you're really going to make a big change to your health over the long term is like get yourself eating foods that don't come much in packages, right? Lots of produce. If you eat meat, fine. You know, just, you know, actual real meat, not packaged processed meat. But like, can these things help? And is there room for these in a diet? Yes, I do think there is. I think people are too afraid of ultra processed foods. I think that the name is scary and it's the same stuff, like we said, that people have been eating for 50 years now or more. Just because we're now calling it ultra processed, it doesn't mean all of it can't be had in some percentage of calories in your diet.
Absolutely. Yep. And ingredient lists, people are so scared of long ingredient lists and scared of things that they don't know. You know, are unfamiliar with, and I think that's misguided in a lot of times.
Yes. So, all right, good. That's ultra processed foods.
We have a ton of people watching right now. Twitter and on YouTube. Smash the like button. Thanks for joining us. This is great. Great to see so many people out here.
Please do that. Yeah. Why is everyone on Twitter? That's interesting.
I know.
Okay. Good. Well. All right. Yeah, please smash like buttons. Do whatever you can to support the show, please. And I guess that's it. Anything else, Doug?
I don't think so. I think that's it for today.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thanks for joining us, everyone. Please smash like buttons. And we'll be back tomorrow for our Thursday show, most fun show of the week. Hopefully we'll have some good stories like we had today to get into.
If you're new here, every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, on YouTube Live, also on Twitter Live and Instagram Live, or you can watch the show or listen to the show on Outlier Health Podcast, anywhere you get your podcast.
Very good. All right. Thanks, everyone. We will see you tomorrow.
All right.
Goodbye.